The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I was teaching a retreat last week, in those retreats, it's lovely having conversations. We have Dharma conversations. The teacher group has Dharma conversations together, and I always appreciate that exchange and interchange and what it generates in my mind and ideas and reflections that it brings up in my mind to have those Dharma conversations. And one of those Dharma conversations was my colleague, my fellow teacher, Pam Weiss, was talking about a group that she'd been teaching, and she had taken questions from the room that day. And the last question that she got was the one that really sparked my interest. And I'll tell you the question. It was, what is enlightenment, and is it a useful goal for our practice? And over the next couple days, there were a lot of reflections that arose in my mind around this question. And then today the question came back to me, and I thought about it some more this afternoon. And so that's what I'd like to share some reflections with you about this topic. What is enlightenment, and is it a worthwhile goal for us in our practice? Now, that word enlightenment, when I first started, I've heard about it for years before I ever began a Buddhist practice. Some idea of some transcendent state or place or something. You know, the word enlightenment, I think, evokes a state or a getting of something in some way. It's like something different than this. That word enlightenment evoked that for me anyway. And as I began practicing and heard teachers talking about the possibility of enlightenment, I was imagining like some big bang explosion that would like create this like, you know, different experience. And I would just forever after that be like, I don't know, floating through the world. And everybody would somehow know that I was enlightened. I don't know. It was just some weird idea about what enlightenment was. But what I found interesting in my reflection, and as I have studied what the Buddha taught and understand something about the words that the Buddha used, what came to my mind as I reflected on this word, enlightenment, what is enlightenment? Well, the word that the Buddha used was, the Pali word that we have as records of what the Buddha used, is Nibbana, or Nirvana in Sanskrit. And that word doesn't translate to anything sounding like enlightenment. It translates to something more like cooling. It is a word that's used to describe what happens when a fire goes out. So it's a kind of ordinary word that would be used when something loses heat. And this piece is what I find so compelling in what the Buddha taught about freedom and awakening. It's not, the word of freedom, the word of Nibbana doesn't evoke getting anything. It evokes a releasing, a cooling. You know, when you set out a pot of rice after it has been cooked and heated, it cools. It releases heat. There's nothing we do to make that happen. It's a natural process of that releasing. And it's a letting go of something. It's not an acquiring of something. It's a releasing of something. It's a releasing of heat. And the Buddha the Buddha used this fire analogy in several places through his teachings. What is the fire? What is the fire that gets cooled with freedom? And he was very explicit. He said, It's the fire of greed, aversion, and delusion. The fire of greed, aversion, and delusion. And when we feel into it, actually, and I'll talk more about this in a bit, I'm going to step back to some of these analogies again, but when we feel into greed, aversion, and delusion, we begin to recognize that they are burning us. So this analogy, it's evocative in the sense of what those qualities do to our minds and to our world. I mean, quite literally, we have the words of fire being evoked in our news through the interchange around North Korea. The word of fire being evoked, and this is a manifestation of human mind. This conversation and the possibility of what that means is a manifestation of the fires of greed, aversion, and delusion. The inner fires of greed, aversion, and delusion literally creating external suffering and fires. Another thing about this analogy that I find interesting and pointing to, again, what the Buddha pointed to in terms of where we look, what is our work essentially? You know, what is the work of our practice? It is exploring what are the conditions that allow the cooling to happen. And essentially in our normal lives, we're just keeping ourselves on the stove all the time. We're keeping ourselves heated up. And how do we take ourselves off the stove? How do we do that? What does that mean? So another piece of the analogy is that another word that's used with a double meaning in the Buddhist texts is the word that's often translated as clinging. The word is upadana in the Pali. And that word also in the Pali refers to the fuel for the fire. It's what fuels the fire. That word, upadana, means the sustenance, the fire, the nutriment for the fire. That would, you know, put some more upadana on the fire. Put some more sustenance on the fire. And so this too, this word clinging is used. And this is another pointing to what it is that keeps this, what is it that keeps us on the stove? What is it that keeps us in the kind of the cycle of not allowing the cooling to start happening? It's this clinging to wanting things to be a certain way, clinging to greed, aversion, delusion. Actually, greed, aversion, and delusion are forms of clinging. And so the question of, I want to do two pieces now. One is the question of, is it worthwhile to use this, to have this as a goal for our practice? And then how might we explore this as a path? And I would say that kind of the first thing that happens that needs to happen in the practice side of recognizing that greed, aversion, and delusion are a fire is that we need to recognize that they burn, that they hurt. And so this is part of our practice. How do we begin to practice with letting go of the fire? The first thing we have to recognize is that we're in the fire. We need to notice that. And maybe paradoxically, I don't know, it's a part of or a way our minds work that often obscures the fact that we're in the fire. It's like when anger is arising in the mind, and this was something that I recognized pretty early in my practice as I was exploring aversion and anger in my own mind, I began to recognize that I kind of had this belief that somehow the anger was going to hurt the person that I was angry with. That was the way my mind was functioning. It's like the anger was creating stories in the mind that was kind of projecting me into a scenario where this person would see my anger and feel the full force of my anger and suffer for it. Kind of in a kind of a projection of that. You know, this idea that this other person is going to suffer because I have this aversion and anger towards them. And so that was what the mind was doing. It was not feeling the repercussions of the anger and the aversion on my own system because I was lost in this story of what it was going to do to somebody else. Not to speak of the unwholesomeness or the kind of twisting of the mind. I mean, when I actually began to recognize that I wanted somebody else to hurt, that was kind of a shock too. I was like, wow, you know, the seeds of war are here in my own mind. Somehow I want this person to suffer. I want this person to feel pain. And when I really understood that, it's like it was so humbling to recognize that this mind has that kind of potential to move in that direction, even if it wasn't actually actively doing anything. It was fantasizing about it. Something about that fantasy kept me from recognizing either that it was, you know, a movement of mind that was not a helpful direction. And also, it kept me from recognizing that this was something that hurt this being. And then when I began kind of being curious, and this is our practice, this is some of our tools with how do we take ourselves off the fire, is partly by recognizing what's happening in this moment and beginning to recognize, okay, aversion or greed or confusion, that's what's happening in this moment. And as we begin to see that, as I began to see this quality of anger in my mind and what it felt like here, now, in this being, I realized this is hurting me. This is painful here. And my situation was such that I was in the Peace Corps, actually, and I was angry with somebody who was not where I was. This person was 7,000 miles away in the United States. I was in a little tiny island in the South Pacific, and it was kind of clear that this anger was not going to kind of travel across the ocean and have any impact on that person. And yet it was burning me up. And that was actually literally the feeling. I was being burned by this feeling of anger. And that recognition, this burns, that was motivating. And so what I would suggest, just maybe through this story, this evokes this a little bit, is cooling a worthy goal? It's like when you see that you are burning, it's not a question of goal. It's just the natural movement of mind. How might this be released? It's not something you have to pick up as a goal. It's just this is what, and the mind begins to understand this is not helpful. And it begins to kind of, if it's given tools and it's given understanding, it begins to kind of reorient in a different direction. And this is what I discovered happening as I began to be curious about that reactivity, that burning internally. And so is it a worthy goal? That's not the question I would ask. Again, it's like, if you see a fire, if you walk into your kitchen and you see that your pot has caught on fire, it's not like you stop and think, is it worth putting it out? You just put out the fire. So I guess, you would say, yes, it's a worthy goal, but it's not really the quite right way to frame it. And again, I think the reflecting on it as being a natural movement, once it's understood to burn, there's a kind of a natural movement to want or to shift towards letting that go, to shift towards releasing of the burning. With respect to anger in particular, the Buddha also used another fire analogy. He said that anger, and this was my experience, and he said anger is like picking up a hot coal to throw at somebody. You're trying to make them hurt by burning them when you hit them with the hot coal, but you're burning yourself first. And that was my experience. And so what's useful there is to not pick up the hot coal. So that's the first piece, is that we start to see greed, aversion, and delusion as a fire. We start to see that it hurts, that it burns. And this is our mindfulness practice. We explore opening to, how am I in this moment? Especially when we're suffering, especially when we're struggling. Because the Buddha pointed to suffering being about this burning. When we are struggling, there's some kind of greed, aversion, or delusion at work. And so when we're suffering, being curious about that, being curious about what is this experience? What is the human experience of this reactivity, of this wanting, of this desire, of this confusion, of this aversion? It's helpful to think of it from my experience. It's helpful to think of it as human experience, because it helps us to recognize it's not personal, let's say. It's these patterns that the Buddha talked about, the fires of greed, aversion, and delusion creating this suffering being felt as burning. This is not. It's not just any one individual feeling this. He described patterns of human experience, patterns of our minds, and so it's helpful to reflect or recognize that how these things work, the burning of anger. That we feel the burning of anger when we become aware of it, that is natural. That it's not a mistake. In fact, partly as we wake up into our suffering and feel often it's felt as a constriction in the heart or a pain it can be felt as a pain in the mind or a pain in the body. It can be felt as burning at times. And beginning to be aware of that, as we become aware of that, we feel the burning of it. And so we feel directly the suffering of it. And so this takes us from that, that kind of fantasy in our mind where we're projecting, like when I was, thinking of the person I was angry with, I was thinking in my mind about, isn't it going to be, great when that person is so miserable, I'll show them, that was being caught in a world that wasn't present. It's like being caught by our thoughts. And when we come into what's actually happening here and now, we feel, oh, this hurts. This is not helpful here and now for this being to be going this direction. And so that's the first thing that we open to. And it's not a mistake to feel the suffering, to feel the pain, to feel the burn. That burn is our education. It's like the, you know, it's what will support us to move to figuring out how to release that, how to move away from that. And so this is the next piece of the practice, is having seen the burn, what do we do? How do we, you know, and often we might have the kind of habitual movement to, oh, I'm burning, let me do something to put out the fire. And this can be something that we move towards. And yet often what happens, you know, kind of paradoxically, often what might happen there is that we go to put out the fire with more aversion. It's like, oh, I'm burning, I hate this burning, how do I get rid of this burning? And so that actually, it's like that adds more fuel to the fire. We are throwing more things onto the fire. And so there's a kind of a, it's kind of a delicate, like, dance, almost a paradoxical dance with our burning that supports the mind to begin to release and let go of that. So there's some strategies to work with it, you know, to work with greed, aversion, delusion. The first piece is to come into the experience of it. And with I'll say some things about greed too, how that also, wanting is, it's subtler form, it's a subtler form of burning than aversion. Often we can tell that we're burning more quickly when we are in anger and aversion, hatred, rage, and it feels like burning. But wanting something to be, you know, wanting something pleasant, that's often less felt as burning because we really don't feel the experience of the wanting itself. Often instead, as with the aversion, we are thinking about how great it's going to be when we get whatever it is that we want. So we're projecting into the future of some kind of having that thing and thinking about, oh, that will be nice when I have that thing. And that is pleasant, that thought. And so that really masks, it's not only not being present that's masking the burning of the wanting itself, but it's the pleasantness of that thought that masks that burning of the wanting. And when we can come into, you know, kind of let go of that thought and come into, what does it actually feel like to want something? We begin to recognize that wanting too hurts. When wanting springs up, there is already a feeling that something is wrong. There's some kind of lack, some kind of sense that this being needs something. It's not okay. It's not complete. Somehow there's that feeling. And that's the feeling of wanting. And that has a burning quality too. It's like, no, I'm not okay. How do I, and it's, we're burning with that feeling of not okay. And so again, There's the exploration of that feeling of the wanting itself that begins to be instructive for us. Now, I'm not saying that we should never take action on things that we think would be supportive or useful. And yet there is this, you know, kind of checking in or exploration of, is this desire, is this wanting moving in a skillful direction? Is it moving in a direction of supporting wholesome qualities of mind? Peace, ease, patience, generosity, tranquility, kindness, joy, delight, love, equanimity. Is it moving in that direction? And so there are movements of, we could call it a movement of desire, a movement in the direction of wanting, that that is not about greed, but is more about an aspiration a direction for our lives. And yet today we're talking about the fire. And so, but I just wanted to point to that possibility that there are kinds of wishes or aspirations or wantings that head us in a beautiful direction. And so not all wanting is this kind of burning. And that's part of our exploration, is beginning to understand what kind of wanting is helpful and what kind of wanting is not helpful. And so it is useful to have the wish or the aspiration to release this burning. So that's a helpful kind of wish. And yet we often apply the aversive side, or the, you know, it's not okay to feel this burning. I need to get rid of this. It hurts too much. And so when something hurts, when something is unpleasant, we tend to have an aversive response to it. And so as we begin to recognize the pain, the suffering of the feelings of aversion and the feelings of wanting, there's a very natural tendency to want to get rid of them. And so there's a little bit of a paradox there. How do we work with that? And so, you know, part of it is to begin to be curious about the experience itself. What is the experience of that anger? What is the experience of that wanting? The human experience, again, I think it's useful to look at it that way. This is natural in a way. Again, a way human beings work. When something unpleasant is there, when somebody does something that creates suffering, or when we respond to something with suffering that somebody has done, very natural for us to have this constriction of heart. It's conditions. And in some ways, we've been trained towards greed and aversion in our cultures. It's like, yeah, this is much the way human beings function. And so it's natural, so we can recognize, okay, so this is the human experience of aversion. This is the human experience of wanting. That can help us to hold it in a different way. Now, this is a learning that we come to through our mindfulness practice, that being mindful of something, some kind of reactivity, being mindful of suffering, being mindful of something that we tend to want to push away or hold on to, it's a very different thing than being in it. So being in anger, being in reactivity, being angry, being aversive, being confused, being, you know, just being in that world, that will perpetuate that. That's like the throwing more fuel on the fire. And that's what we habitually do. We think these thoughts, like those thoughts about this person shouldn't have done that and they're going to really get it. I'm going to make sure they, you know, whatever. All of those thoughts, that's throwing fuel on the fire. Paying attention to the thing that we're angry with or averse to, or the thing that we want, we tend to fuel that fire. And so there's a very different approach. Instead of being attentive or focusing on the thing that we're angry with, or kind of being in the anger, or being in the aversion, or being in the greed, being in the fire is very different than being aware of the fire. It's completely different experience. What essentially it does, I mean, if we keep, I'm playing with this fire analogy today, it's kind of like, instead of being in the middle, like you're standing in the middle of the fire, it's like you're standing on the side of the fire and recognize, oh, there's a fire there. Okay. Useful to know there's a fire there. And yet we're not then in the middle of the fire. One of the things that we begin to recognize when we become aware with mindfulness, oh, this is the human experience of reactivity. There can be a shift where we recognize that we're no longer being burned in the same way. There may still be the burn happening. but it's like we have stepped back from it and are aware of it, but aren't being consumed by it. And so the mindfulness is the first step to a different relationship to that fire. And then it's useful at that point, again, playing with this analogy of fire, to check in. Because when we become aware of a kind of a reactivity, so we become aware of it, you know, sometimes we notice that we might actually be, in some subtle way, in our thoughts, perhaps, continuing to throw fuel on that fire. You know, that we're still somehow engaged in that process. That we're still thinking or somehow engaged in, maybe it has to do with a belief that, like for myself, a big piece of the anger that around that particular person was a belief that they shouldn't have done that. You know, well, not they had done it, but, you know, so there was this kind of the constriction around the belief that it shouldn't have happened. This should not have happened to me. And yet it did. And so the mind kept kind of holding to that belief or that view. And in a way, that holding to that belief or view was like unwittingly or inadvertently kind of throwing fuel onto that fire. Even as I could kind of recognize, yes, there is a fire there. There was a kind of a subtler belief underneath that was kind of keeping it going. And so sometimes it can be useful to check in. Am I still doing something with this fire? Have I got some belief that this fire is somehow serving me? That this is somehow useful? It's just kind of checking into that. If there is some active engagement, like the mind is doing something or participating, sometimes I use the phrase, you know, jumping on the bandwagon of that. You know, it's like there's some idea in the mind around something that I need or something that I want. When we become aware of that, when we become aware of it, we can kind of check in. Am I jumping on the bandwagon of that? Am I kind of engaged with the doing of that? Am I still fueling the fire? Am I still throwing logs onto that fire? If you notice that, and sometimes we can see that, yeah, there's still some active engagement with the doing of that, you can play with seeing if you might be able to step back from that engagement. To say, okay, maybe I should turn aside from these thoughts. Maybe I can actively let go of all of these thoughts. Maybe. Sometimes we can step back from a kind of an active participation in something that is burning us. And it's useful to do that if you can. And yet much of the time, I mean, even when we step back from an active engagement, often, I mean, so the fire is burning and, you know, maybe we're sitting there throwing fuel on the fire and we stop throwing fuel on the fire. So with that analogy, you know, we stop throwing fuel on the fire, but the fire keeps burning. It's got its momentum, it's got its conditions. It's been burning for a while, and even when we stop putting fuel on it, it will keep burning. And there's a part of the practice that is opening to that part of the pain. So maybe we can step back from throwing additional fuel on the fire, but then, you know, one of the things that often happens with people said, I stopped engaging. Why didn't it go away? Why didn't that anger go away? Why didn't that wanting go away? Because I let go of that, or seeing that it just came back, or that it still has some momentum or something. This is also very natural that the conditions for that fire have been in place. And so when we stop fueling the fire, it gives an opportunity for the fire. Potentially, we can stand there. I mean, you know, we don't want the fire to spread. We may be able to stand there and hold it with mindfulness. And that's kind of like recognizing, okay, oh, a wind blew up. You know, let's clear the brush around the fire so that it doesn't, you know, spread further. And so you're kind of tending the fire in order that it will go out, or so that it will go out. And it will go out over time. And so this is a big part of our practice, is appreciating that when we open to mindfulness to our challenges, to our struggles, maybe we can disengage a little bit, but a lot of the practice is beginning to cultivate the capacity to be with whatever it is. Whether it's a pain of loss, or an anger, or a confusion, can we be with that? It's a kind of a, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to hold our own suffering without reactivity, without that aversion of wanting it to go away. And kind of tending that fire while it releases, while it burns out. There's a lot of learning that happens, and essentially our minds will head in that direction. It's quite fortunate in many ways the way our system is put together. You know, when we understand, when our minds get the information that fire hurts, you know, our minds begin to learn how not to do that, begin to learn how to let that go. When we get the information that that is what's happening, when our mind begins to recognize this pattern of mind is painful, it's like there's an intelligence in our system that understands how to let that go and how to release that. There's a kind of a wisdom in our system that understands or can move in the direction of releasing that pain, that suffering, that anger. And our system will move in that direction because our organism wants to move towards well-being. Kind of inherently, as a natural thing, our organism wants to move towards well-being. And it's trying to do that. You know, it's poignant in many ways. It's tender when I think about how our minds work, you know. We're trying to find our way to happiness, but so much we are confused about what it means. You know, there's a fundamental misunderstanding about that fire, you know, a fundamental misunderstanding that maybe that our minds believe that either that fire is serving us somehow and we're not being burned by it, or that somebody else made that fire and it's not my problem, or somebody else made that fire and it's their responsibility to put my fire out. We have all of these views, and the place where we can open to it is with awareness. And when we open to that, the wisdom of our system, the wisdom of our minds begins to release that heat. And again, the heat analogy for me is very evocative and very much in line with my own experience, that when my mind can hold it, when it is possible, and it's not always possible for the mind to have the balance to hold reactivity. And I'll talk in a moment about what we can do then. But when it is possible to do that, that the cooling happens on its own. That image of taking the rice off the stove, it will cool. Just the natural conditions of that. That's the movement. Heat releases, dissipates. And so holding that reactive pattern with mindfulness is like taking it off the stove. And then the mind understands. The mind does the releasing. Our system, maybe we could say, our system, our organism is designed to do that kind of releasing. And so it's a natural process. That's very happiness producing for me, that thought. And that's a lot of the practice. Can the mind find the way to support the conditions to hold whatever is happening with that balance of mind? And that's our journey, because very often it isn't possible. It's not possible. And there are some tools. I mean, so one of the things I used a lot, in particular around my anger, was a kind of a stepping away from. So there's you know, when something is strong in our systems, there are times when a kind of reactivity is like, it's like an overwhelming, it's a forest fire. It's just burning out of control. And our mindfulness may be like, you know, just this little tiny trickle. And so there are times when we may need to do something, to step away, to turn our attention away from that. The burning is our mind being consumed by that fire, being caught in that fire, kind of pulled into the swirl of that fire. And when we see and sometimes what I found is that trying to bring my attention to something strongly reactive like that, it just was like I ended up just adding fuel to the fire when I tried to bring attention to it. And so there can be a stepping away where we just like say, okay, wow, that's a big one. I just can't even like try to be mindful of that right now. I'm going to put my attention on something else. And paradoxically, you know, here's where the fire analogy kind of breaks down in my experience, because you would think that, you know, letting an out of control fire, like take your eyes off of that out of control fire and put it on something else, that would be dangerous. But it actually is really helpful. Because what's happening when we are in that out of control fire is that we are unwittingly feeding it. We are adding to it. It's not out of control on its own. It's out of control because we're doing something in there. And so sometimes we need to just turn to something else entirely. Turn our attention to something maybe neutral. You know, something simple. Something where we can let ourselves just land and rest for a little while. And that, if we can keep our attention on that and off of the reactivity, will create the conditions for us not to be adding the fuel to the fire. And so that's a strategy that's so helpful when the fire is out of control. I call it my not now strategy. It's like, yeah, that's there. I'm going to put my attention on something else. And it has that kind of quality in the turning away. It's not an aversion to it. Because the aversion would be like throwing more fuel on the fire. If you're trying to repress it or push it away when you put your attention on something else, it's kind of like that repression is throwing fuel on the fire behind your back. So those are my thoughts about the fire and also about freedom, You know, I started this with enlightenment, and yet we ended with the fire. And yet, you know, the question, is it worth finding our way to letting, you know, finding our way out of that fire? Absolutely. And it's possible. And it's not so much a goal. It's more of an imperative. So, comments, questions. Yeah, Mary, you hit something.
I have to read it to make sure I got it straight. It really is encouraging for me to try to write this on a piece of paper and keep reading it. There's a wisdom in our system recognizing pain. Our organism wants to move towards well-being.
Yes. It's very happiness-producing. It's comforting in some way. And yet what we have to recognize is that our system is also structured in such a way that it's very easy for delusion to get in the way of that natural process of moving towards well-being. Mm-hmm. Our system is also designed so that, you know, we our minds can create an idea of, oh, that would be well-being, completely make something up and think that's what would well-being would be and head towards that, while at the same time it's actually reinforcing our pain. And so, you know, the practice of recognizing greed, aversion, and delusion are the pain. And so that's why actually as we drop in and begin to see, oh, anger, that hurts, that it's useful, because then our system actually gets different information. Seeing delusion is more difficult, and it is possible. I did a whole series on delusion recently, and maybe I'll talk about, if that's of interest at some point, I'll talk about that a little more fully. That's a big one to go into at this point. But yeah.
Could you give specific examples of what you do, the not now?
With the not now?
Then what do you do?
Okay, yeah. So one example would be... you know, recognizing there's a pattern that's very strong, catching the mind, and turning to something neutral, something that's pretty easy to be with. It's kind of a distraction. You're using a shifting of attention to almost distract yourself from whatever it is that you're reactive to. It's like whatever that we're reactive to is like a magnet that just keeps kind of wanting to pull the mind back to it. And so we need something strong to pull our attention away from that magnet, something that's easy to connect with. And I would suggest also not just a mindless distraction. So if you like decide to put on the television and just watch TV as a distraction from whatever this thing is, you may find, I mean, the television has got a whole bunch of stuff on it, and the way our minds work, it's like very likely that our mind will find some pathway from something we've seen on television back to that magnet. And so it's really useful not to use some kind of mindless distraction because of the way the mind has its patterns to find its way back to those challenges. So we need something that we can stay aware with. And for myself, something that I used a lot, and in one particular situation, it seemed as though a lot of the time a particular form of reactivity arose, I was walking. I was out walking, and it seemed to be a time when my mind would just kind of wander and stumble into its habitual patterns. And so I found that putting my attention on my feet and walking, just that sensation of the contact with the ground, it was a pretty strong experience. I could stay with it. I could just be with that. So that's one that I found really useful, is some strong physical sensation. For some of you, it might you might find, and it can be useful to cultivate something, and also I'd say not something in the core of the body, not something from the nose to the hips, because this area is often very activated when we're experiencing a strong reactivity. And if we, for instance, try to pay attention to our breath, while we're having a strong reactivity. It's very likely that the breath will have engagement with that pattern, you know, that the breath will be a little jagged, it'll be tight. And so that may just remind you, it'll just remind the mind and pull you right back to it. So I find attention to something besides the breath or something in this area. And so, you know, hands can be a strong sensation. You could, you know, just feel the contact of your hands. Sometimes if you've cultivated the experience of hearing, that can be a really useful avenue because it's outside of the physical body. So you could, I mean, some you could use putting on a piece of some kind of sound that doesn't have a lot of emotional content to it. I mean, like those, like the there's sometimes, you know, white noise sounds, like the sound of water falling or the rippling of a river. Sometimes you could attend to that if the ambient sound is not a sound that you have a facility for just connecting with. And then also there's a tool. Well, this is one of the strongest tools that I've found. I might have offered it a few weeks ago. I don't remember, but we'll do it together here. It uses sight, and for those of us who are sighted, the field of sight is one of the strongest areas of attention, and we can use that power by directing our attention to specific objects in our experience. And what I do in a room like this is I pick corners. Outside, I would just pick kind of arbitrary objects, but just picking corners. And then you look at a corner, and then you shift. You let yourself look at a corner for about a second, and then you shift to another corner. And any place two lines come together, it might be the corner of a chair, the corner of a piece of paper, the corner of the room. And so let's just try that together for about 20 seconds. So look at a corner. And then shift and look at another corner. And shift and look. And we'll do that together in silence. It's helpful to move your head and not just the eyes. So, usually I ask people how that was, but we are at 9 o'clock, and so I will just say that for me, this is one of the most powerful tools for breaking a magnetic pull to some difficult experience. If you can do this for even 90 seconds, it will give your mind a break from whatever it is. And it's usually not that hard to do this for 90 seconds. I think probably some of you did experience a kind of a settling or a relaxation with this. It can be a very powerful tool to break a kind of a stickiness to support that not now. So you basically need some tools, something to shift to. And we need to stop. So thank you for your attention.